Chapter 34 Corellian Space, Above Tralles. Leia watched the status boards as they provided updates on the situation at Relidir. Headquarters shields down. Headquarters destroyed. Tralles citizens spilling into the streets, sniping on GA ground occupation forces with hand blasters, hunting blasters. Corellian capital ships and hyperdrive-equipped starfighters dropping out of hyperspace on the far side of Tralles, joining the furball in the skies above Relidir, swelling its numbers, even as the GA retaliated with more and more starfighter squadron launches. Covert messages from Han relayed in tight-burst data packets. They arrived from his datapad through a sophisticated comlink currently glued to the bottom of a mouse droid scurrying around somewhere in the vicinity of the bridge. Those messages reported Han alive, Jaina alive, Wedge alive, the Antilles girl alive. Withdrawal command from Dodona. The GA squadrons obeyed, disengaging where and when they could, some of them staying behind for last-minute exchanges with the gloating Corellians. Leia was called back to the bridge, where she rejoined Admiral Limpen on the walkway. Together they watched Dodona's complement of surviving starfighters line up for landings in the ship's hangar bays.
"We could have held on here," Admiral Limpen said, "by throwing more and more forces into the mix, and yet that would have been counterproductive. Making peace harder to achieve. We didn't. We won't. But that makes this conclusion a scripted one. The men and women who died, young and brave, did so for a predestined conclusion."
Leia nodded in silent agreement.
"It feels not like a victory, or even like a loss. It feels like dancing to someone else's tune."
"The GA isn't playing it," Leia said, "nor the Corellians."
The Admiral shrugged.
"Perhaps it's random chance. I believe in randomness. I see it often. But one can never think of it as friendly. It never has our best interests at heart."
She turned her attention to Leia.
"Colonel Moyen says your tactical recommendations were very well reasoned, very helpful. Though he was surprised to find them a bit conservative, considering your reputation."
Leia shrugged.
"We get older. Perhaps we get more protective of those we lead. If I'm more conservative, that's why. Of course. Will you be returning to Coruscant or Corellia?"
"Corellia, for now, where I can conservatively argue for peace, while the war makers are strutting around crowing about their victory.
I'll arrange for a starfighter escort for your shuttle."
Leia shook her head.
"No one's going to fire upon an unarmed shuttle. This isn't like the Yuuzhan Vong War, fought in mindless savagery. Both sides are us."
"For now."
Even on the Admiral's Duros features, considered expressionless by human standards, Leia could detect sorrow, pessimism.
"In my experience, it doesn't take long for us to become them. And when that happens, every savagery becomes possible."
"True."
The Admiral returned her attention to the viewports.
"May the Force be with you, Princess."
"And also with you, Admiral."
On the shuttle flight back to Corellia, Leia sat wrapped in something like sorrow, and for the first few minutes of the flight she could not understand where it came from, what it meant. Her family had survived. Then the answer came to her. Her family had survived, but she hadn't, in a sense. She'd turned into something else for a while. In protecting her husband and daughter, she'd lied and deceived, not even as any politician must, but as a conscienceless manipulator of others. Anyone finding out the truth about her activities could use them as leverage against her, weakening her, perhaps disillusioning others about her. She tried to think of what she wouldn't have done to protect Han and Jaina. If she'd had access to a self-destruct code that would annihilate any pilot getting too close to them, would she have used it? If she'd been able to swap transponder codes so that friends seemed like enemies, causing the GA forces to shoot one another out of the skies wholesale, sacrificing 100 or 1,000 lives for one she loved, would she have done so? Would she sacrifice the peace they were so desperately seeking? Would she send whole populations to war with one another to keep her loved ones safe? She didn't know, for the answer was mixed within her, and she wasn't exactly the same person she'd been half an hour before. But there was enough yes to it that it worried her, caused her to imagine what she would become if all her answers were in the affirmative. That was what attachment was, she decided, the kind of attachment the Jedi had traditionally worked to avoid. It was sacrificing lives that were not hers to preserve her own happiness. In the future, she would willingly give up her life to preserve that of Han, or her children, or Luke and his family. But she would not give up a life she did not have the right to sacrifice. She could not keep Han alive forever, nor herself. Some day he would die, or she would. That was life. She would do whatever she could to keep it from happening. Whatever she could, short of evil. Making that decision was like plunging a blade of transparasteel into her heart, breaking it off so the tip remained within her. But it was the right choice. When the pilot finally announced, "Entering Corellia atmosphere," over the shuttle's speakers, Leia was at peace. She was not happy. She could almost feel her heart's blood dripping from her wherever she walked, pooling beneath her wherever she sat. But she was serene. Star System MZX-32905, near Bimiel. "You'll give her appropriate rights?" Jason asked. Lumia nodded.
"She was a noble warrior. I will treat her as such."
They stood together in the large airlock adjacent to the hangar bay, where Jason's shuttle waited. The docking tube was pressurized and coupled to the shuttle's side. Ben, unconscious, was aboard, strapped onto a seat with his lightsaber once again hooked to his belt.
"I know this was hurtful," Lumia said, "but you have been strengthened by it already."
Jason, pained, looked at her. "Words, Lumia. He will strengthen himself through pain. They don't diminish the tragedy of what just happened. Not at all."
"It's not a cliché, Jason. It's a necessary component of the ethical assumption of our powers."
She gestured out past the shuttle and the hangar doors to the unseen stars.
"The Jedi find their balance through the abandonment of attachment. The Sith celebrate attachment, but find our balance in the deliberate, agonizing sacrifice of some of the things we love most. Only by that means can we retain our appreciation for loss, pain, mortality, those things that ordinary people experience."
Jason considered. Her words made sense. Such a philosophy would allow the Sith to retain their passion, but pain would keep those passions in check. Sith like Palpatine had not followed this principle, had followed philosophies of gain without loss, and their greed had doomed them and everyone around them, including Jason's grandfather, Darth Vader.
"You will be the man your grandfather couldn't," Lumia said. "Go home. Do what you can to stop the war and to free up time to study. Eventually you will need to find yourself an apprentice,
Ben may be worthy, but I think he is already too steeped in the Jedi ways of softness and serenity. So look elsewhere, as well as at him. You'll need to train to open your mind to facets of the Force you've been instructed to ignore or despise, and your greatest attainment of knowledge and power will come at the same time as your greatest act of sacrifice, when you give up something that is as dear to you as life, making your love immortal through its sacrifice.
We'll see, he said.
Come back, and I will help you see.
She stood watching through the airlock's transparisteel wall as he boarded, sealed his shuttle, uncoupled the boarding tube. The shuttle rose on its repulsors, gently turned toward the opening doors, and departed. Tired, drained, jubilant, Lumia returned to the living chamber at the top of her habitat. She lay on a couch there and stared up through the scratched transparisteel dome at the stars.
I've won,
she said. Jason, dark-garbed, a gold and black lightsaber hilt at his belt, the pupils of his eyes golden orange, moved out from a shadowy nook and turned to face her. His mouth did not move, but his words carried to Lumia's mind. And so I must go. Become nothingness.
You always were nothingness. You're a projection, dark side energy from the caverns, shaped by my imagination and Jason Solo's form. But you'll be back. Bit by bit, Jason Solo will become you.
And at last I'll have a name. A Sith name.
Yes.
The Phantom Sith moved forward to stand over her. He will learn that the attack at Toriaz Station was your doing, that good men were ruined by the phantoms from your mind. Phantoms taking the forms of those they loved, that this war to come could have been prevented but for your interference.
Yes, some day, perhaps. In the meantime, his anger, the anger of his family, will be directed at Thrakken Sal Solo, who's more to blame than I am for that attack, since he did what he did out of self-interest. And by the time Jason discovers the full truth, he will understand how important he is, how he could not come to be without those events occurring, and he will forgive me.
I feel his emotions. He will hate you for these events.
But he will love me for them, too.
Yes. Lumia smiled.
Then I know balance. The balance of the Sith.
The false Jason nodded, then slowly and without evident distress, faded to nothingness. Bleary-eyed, gently rubbing his stomach, Ben moved into the shuttle's cockpit and dropped into the co-pilot seat. How long was I unconscious? Hours, Jason said. Where's Nalani? Jason paused, looking for the right words. But the gentle ones would, in the long run, do more damage than the cold, short, truthful ones. Ben, she's dead. Ben sat up straight. The expression he turned on Jason was pained, disbelieving. How? The Sith? Yes and no. Jason considered his answer, considered the mix of truth and lies he would someday have to unravel. There was a person in the lower caverns who called himself a Sith. But he wasn't. He was just a dark side force user who'd learned to tap into the powers imbued in the place. They made him very strong. But only there, on that asteroid. He sent deadly illusions against us. I remember, I fought Mom. She kicked the stuffing out of me, just as she would in real life. Nalani fought the phantoms of her own inadequacy, phantoms I thought I'd helped her deal with when she was just an apprentice, and she was too weak for them. They killed her.
Oh, Sith Spawn.
Ben slumped.
What about Bisha? Bersha?
The boy looked confused. Bresha, Jason supplied. He well knew why Ben looked confused, why he faltered over Bresha's name. Jason had interfered with Ben's memories while the boy slept, brushing away Ben's recollections of the woman he knew as Bresha almost as artfully as a painter might restore a classic portrait. Doubtless, Ben was confused by his sudden inability to remember her features. Jason would attribute it to the many knocks and blows Ben had sustained. She died, too. Succumbed to her injuries. He heaved a false sigh. I've ordered a tremendous quantity of explosives to blow the asteroid up. It was true that anyone following the coordinates now in the shuttle's memory to the listed location of her habitat would find only boulder-sized chunks of stone. Jason had falsified details in the shuttle's memory, charting a route from Lord to a different uninhabited star system, another asteroid field. Lumia was safe from discovery. For now.
Good.
Ben sat, not speaking, for a few minutes, drumming his fingers restlessly on the arm of the co-pilot's chair.
It's not fair that they died.
No, it's not. But that happens. It's life. We just have to find a way to make ourselves stronger because of it. Ben nodded.
I guess you're right.
Coruscant. He exists. Luke looked up from his terminal. On its screen scrolled updated reports of the engagement at Tralis, but Mara could feel that the worry on his face was caused by something else. He finally exists. For real.
Your phantom enemy.
Yes. Luke rose. That must have been why we were attacked tonight. The false Jason, the false Ben. They occupied our emotions so thoroughly that we missed the creation of whatever he is, wherever he is. Maybe it happened close by, or there would have been no reason to divert us. He looked in all directions, as though the smooth stone walls of the enclave interior chamber would become transparent and reveal the enemy. But they remained stubbornly opaque.
We'll find him,
Mara said.
And we'll beat him.
Her attention returned to her own terminal, and a smile crossed her features.
Message from Jason and Ben. They're coming home.